Station number 16788.
Commander North over, Real 2.
Well, we had a new 75%, the ship's company were new, and there was no time to settle in because we were immediately on convoys, flying Spitfires, being attacked, dodging attacks, and everyone was still learning, still trying to pick up the threads of what they really had to do. It was only the few, 25% of the original ship's company, that really knew what was happening, which was to prove a dead loss when we were actually sunk. Because I'm sure, on that in August the 11th, that at least 50% of the ship's company didn't even know where their abandoned ship stations were, didn't even know where the boats were, didn't even know how the boats operated. It was a rather unfortunate situation, and you must remember the situation was grim. We were being outclassed by aircraft. We only one convoy did we not have attacked by the Germans and Stukas. And those, of course, were the Italians, and nothing against them. They pressed home their attacks and they sank ships. But we were more successful. But we were kept very busy. You didn't really have time to settle. Whereas the original ship's company, we had those June, July, August, well, 3 months before the war actually started. Then we had that period in the Indian Ocean where, through isolation and continual steaming, we all settled down to a good ship's company. Very difficult to explain.
So can you take me through the events in the Mediterranean when you returned there in 1942, please, as you remember them?
Well, that's what I'm just saying. It was unfortunately not despondency, but we knew we were fighting against a foe that had more equipment and better equipment. Having said that, we knew our job. We took four convoys, including Pedestal, through. And we also flew 165 Spitfires to Malta. Now, those trips weren't too bad because we only used to go the other side of the Canary Islands down towards Cape Bond to give them enough space, enough fuel and enough flying time to get to Malta. We also did two trips with the Wasp, the American carrier. I won't go into that because that might get in somebody's ears and they might object to what I have got to say. Because like Errol Flynn in Burma, they won the war, didn't they? However, we did actually ourselves supply Malta with 165 Spitfires at that very, very crucial time because they were in a bad way. I won't say anything about the Wasp's efforts, I better not. But as far as I'm concerned, and our ship was concerned, we knew what kind of trip we were going on because we would go over alongside the shore jetty and there was all these huge boxes which suddenly overnight became Spitfires which were loaded onto our upper deck and we went back over to the detached mole. So we knew we were on a Spitfire run. And, of course, if it was a convoy, we just loaded up with plenty of ammunition and waited for orders. And away we went on a convoy. And we used to go a little nearer than to Malta, of course.
Can you describe the sailing of the Operation Pedestal, what you remember of that?
Oh, yes, that was very spectacular and gave us a lot of confidence. And I hope that most of the people in the convoy had the same confidence. We didn't go straight to Malta, we went out into the Atlantic, where all the escorts met. There was a Nelson, Rodney, and they were going to fire 6-inch guns at an 8,000 yards close fuse. And the Rodney did so as to show us, and there on the horizon was a whacking great big, as big as Portland, black smoke, where if any torpedo bombers would have been coming in that way, you know, they'd have been just destroyed by the sheer blast alone. Also, some of the ships, the crews of some of them, the 6-inch, were given a new type of shell with they could fire, and it would close-range fuse, because it was aircraft then, in those days, it was our biggest enemy. However, we went out, we did operations, which we didn't know what they were doing, but we went round in circles, and then the next day we steamed back through the Med with the convoy, all 14 ships, and formed up, and off we went.
What was your action station aboard ship?
Damage control. We met down below decks at a centre where we had all our tools and wooden shores and firefighting gear, and we didn't know really what was going on other than the bumps and thuds when they got a bit close to us. As I say, we were there as the maintenance people to keep the ship going.
Were you doing any damage control during the operation?
Not during that operation. It was too quick. We sank in. we sank in. Let's see, we were hit 12 minutes from the time the first torpedo hit us. We had done damage control when that bomb in January dropped, because they flooded the magazines and we had to go down and shore up the bulkhead in the engine room, which was bulging badly, and there was a danger it might have broken. But other than that, there was no damage control necessary when we had the fire. So no, we didn't really do any damage control other than that one time in January.
What was your rank at the time when the ship sank?
Oh, I was only a... Oh, I'd just been made petty officer. Shipwright. No, joiner. Joiner 3. Third class.
Now, coming on to the sinking of the ship, can you describe in detail what you personally remember of the event?
I can tell you every single thing that happened to me and the ship, because that's engraved on my mind and always will be. At about 12 o'clock we went for midday meal. Had a midday meal. We went up to the workshop where the four of us joiners used to sleep and do all our live, do our washing and all that kind of thing. And there was an air raid warning. That would have been somewhere around about 12:15, say. Well, we all went to action stations, and then we had the all clear and the pipe standby to fly off fighters. We were carrying 21 Hurricanes, Sea Hurricanes, as fighters. We didn't have Swordfish on that trip. And that was as the other two aircraft carriers. They also had all fighters. I think it was all fighters, but anyway, we did. And it was pipe that we were going to fly off our patrol of fighters. Well, you know, what the others had done, I suppose we were, the others had been doing it during the morning, and it was our turn. Now that, I don't know, was a whether it was a good or bad idea. We'll start with personnel, first of all, because it was the first time we'd flown off a Spitfire, a sea Spitfire, as our own protection, because you can't count the ones that went to Malta. So masses of people went up in the nets along the flight deck. You had girders, like a pathway with what we call the nets, where people used to get in there when the aircraft was flying off. And a lot of people went up to that position. Three of our staff did. Anyway, I went to the workshop. Bob went to the workshop. Bob Stern, Darby Allen went to the workshop, and we said, Bob and I said, well, we just as well, we've seen them fly off before, we just as well get our head down for half an hour before the next raid. And we were just preparing to do... I just got up on the bench, that's right. And then, exactly 1:15, because I'd taken my watch off, just put it in the drawer, there was four terrific explosions just outside, I say port side, didn't it? Just outside at 1 second intervals. So that submarine, and of course we know by the Eagle Association, we've had that U-boat commander to one of our meetings, which I thought was very bad taste. But as he said, he was there to do exactly what he was told to do. He came up, there was an aircraft carrier, 8,000 yards, and he just went 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's how they hit us. Right amidships. Now you've got to remember, there's something before that that caused our sinking so fast. They flew off the planes, and then the captain made, in my opinion, the error that sank us. There's the convoy like that. The main part of the convoy was steaming on that way towards Malta. We'd had to turn round into the wind, assume full speed of 20 knots, into the wind to get these seafarers off. They flew off. Now, instead of, as I would have done, and that instead of turning as he did, let's see, he was going that way, and he turned to
starboard.
What he should have done, he should have turned to port, which would have taken him back. I've got it on film how far away the Rodney and the convoy was. He would have taken the ship back towards the convoy. Instead of that, by turning the way he did, he put us out, right out on the flank, where any destroyers from the convoy would be unable to pick up on Aztec as a sub. Anyway, he was turning at full speed, so the ship was at an angle of at least 35 degrees as he was turning. As you know, a ship, as you go round the corner, it does that. Which meant when those four torpedoes hit us, it hit us above the bulges, and it just split. This I can only imagine, as it's my job to know damage control. It must have split us right down, because the ship went straight on up, beam's end. And by the time I'd gone over and tried to get a boat away and finally had to go up and cut away a Carly float, the bows were right underwater. And even at the island where I was cutting away this Carly float, there was only 4 foot between us and the water. And when I went in after, as I say, cutting this float away, I'd only swum about 50 yards and I heard someone say, "She's going." I turned round, and lo and behold, she'd went right over, so that her bottom came up, and just slid away like that. And there was an awful lot of, in spite of Admiralty's announcements in the paper, only 197 was lost. I'm afraid that was the way the war was run on propaganda, because I would say at least 350 were lost. And when I was looking on the destroyer after I'd been picked up, and the number of heads that were there bobbing up and down in the water, it was certainly more than 197. And then we all got split up, you see, when we got back to Gibraltar. Another destroyer picked us up, took us back to the destroyer to Gibraltar. Yeah, just excuse me. I was amongst the group that went to the HMS Argus, which was another old aircraft carrier. She hadn't come with us. Well, I can't remember that anyway. Where they gave us some clothes, 15 shillings, I think. And that was where this one man spoke to me, who'd recognised me by my voice, which whenever I hear myself on a tape, I know is extremely Dorset. Because he wouldn't have recognised me in the water, because I was black. I was covered with old fuel, because I had to swim quite some way to get the Carly float I dropped over to bring it back to pick people up. But he recognised my voice. Now, he was the only one that ever recognised me. Now I've lost train of where I was. Oh, yes, coming home. And I was very, very surprised, and I still cannot understand it to this day. I was brought home by a destroyer, HMS Tartar. And as far as I know, I was the only survivor on that destroyer. I was in the Chesapeake's mess, and I felt almost isolated. And I've never known why. Did they think I was daft in what I said? I don't know. So anyway, that's it. I came home. Admiralty tried to rob us all because the Ark Royal, they'd given them £25 watches, so we only had £3. They tried to rob me with my toolkit. They were only going to give me £15. I eventually got
£27. For compensation?
Compensation, oh yeah. All we had was one serge suit. I mean, I'd already just bought because we were banking. The Furious was with us, that's right. And the rumour went around the ship that the Furious was going to relieve us, which he might well have been, I don't know. And we were coming home for a break. So I went ashore at Jib and bought myself a brand new best gold badge doe skin suit. But that don't count. So anyway, we came home, given 14 days leave, went back. And then they did give me 5 months. In a shore job, working down the Portsmouth dockyard, living on board Monitor, the Marshall Salt, and we were servicing and repairing the local minesweeper people who used to go out at night keeping the channels clear, and then they'd come in during the day and we'd have to put right any errors or any defects, sometimes at night as well.
Can I just go back to the sinking? Because often things are lost, people forget things. If we can just go over the sinking again, can you just take me through exactly what happened to you from your first realization that the torpedo had hit till you were rescued? Can you just take it step by step again, just in case we've missed anything out?
Well, as I say, I'll just stick to me. Well, no, I'll have to bring in the other two. I laid up on my bench, which is where I normally slept anyway, and to have another little rest, and then the torpedoes hit us. That's 1:15. I rolled off of the bench. As I did, I saw Darby Allen, that was the other one of the joiners. It looked as though he'd been sucked out by the blast. Seemed funny to me, but he survived. But he was sucked out through the wreckage below the nets. I spoke to Darby Allen and said, "Are you all right, Bob?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Come on, we've got to get out of here. Look, the water is very close." We climbed up through the wreckage and onto the flight deck. We saw the last of the aircrafts slide over the side because the angle by then was 40 degrees. We pulled ourselves up the flight deck by means of the arrestor wire to get to the higher side, something you're taught, always go to the higher side. Plus the fact that I knew that was the only boat or the only place where it would be possible to launch a boat. And that was a 32-foot cutter, which was on the starboard side of the quarter deck, which was on davits, and it would be ready rigged for lowering. Now, because of the angle of the ship, all our other boats were on not davits, but on beams, gantries, on rollers, and they would have to be pulled out to be lowered, all in theory, when the ship is on even keel. But we'd just gone over like that. So it meant all those boats on this side were already underwater, underneath the flight deck. And on the other side, I knew it'd be no good trying to get them away, because how do you pull a whacking great big boat up that gantry and lower it over the side? But I knew this one, because it was my job in entering and leaving harbour, to see the boats were all in there, you know, as they should be, for repairs and the bungs put in and all that. Anyway, I knew it would be possible to get that away, so I went down to the quarterdeck. What happened to Bob, I don't know, except that he survived, so I don't know where he went. When I got down there, there was people swarming up from down below, because that was at that time, remember, we were going down in the bows, we were right over, and that would have been the only exit out. They were coming right down from forward, they must have been, and spewing up this one hatchway, and then going on up, or over the side. The boat was there, no one was paying any attention to it, and I still don't know how I got the power of command to do it. But I managed to get at least 24 men to get hold of the falls and get the boat out ready for lowering. We started to lower, and then I realized that with the angle we were at, then like that, there's the boat here, down below was a propeller. And if we dropped it there, the boat would have been holed by the propeller blades. So that would have been that. I still don't know how I did this either, but I managed to persuade some other men to go over the side and get between the ship's side and the boat. They did, and we started to gently lower again, and then a bloody fall of a lieutenant commander, RNR, tall chap, I'll never forget him, came up from below. He was obviously a seaman. There's a boat, into the boat, lads. And they did, like a lot of sheep, went into the boat. The boat collapsed, ended up between the screw. Most of those men that were over there that had been doing what I told them to do must have been killed. And then he just disappeared again. Well, I knew it was no good. I was just going to jump in the water, and I looked out, and there wasn't a single thing floating. So, I thought that the Carly floats up on the island side. So I went up three decks, when I got to the island. And there was two chaps there already, trying to free a Carly float. And this brings me back to the difference between a trained crew and a crew that had only been there a short time. Those split pins and clips hadn't been maintained once since we came out to the Med that second time, and they were covered with paint, corrosion, salt water, and there they were trying to undo them with their fingers. Now, I always carried a sharp seaman's knife whenever I went to sea, always. At action stations, I used to take an axe and a hammer, but I always had round my waist a sharp knife, so I was able to cut one Carly float away. I could then feel the ship moving, both down and more over, and I said to the two chaps that were there, I said, "Here, you can have my knife and try, but I advise you to get into the water," which is what I did, and started swimming away. And they didn't get the Carly float away, and I wonder what happened to them. I swam away. I heard someone say, "She's going." I turned round on my back. That was when the depth charges started. Where they come from, I don't know, but it was just like a sledgehammer hitting you in the back. And I think that killed quite a few of those people floating with their life belts on. But that's only my surmise, I wouldn't know. I then turned round to see where my Carly float was, and that was being blown away. So I swam after it, and found myself in the middle of an oil fuel patch. Fortunately, I'd been taught all this. You swim like this, push the oil away from you.
But of course,
yeah, and push the oil to make a passage. But of course, it didn't work, because when I got on the destroyer, I mean, their own mother wouldn't have recognized me. I was black as black. But anyway, that's going on. I got the Carly float. It was upside down. I got on top of it and started to paddle it towards. And then a tall gentleman. Now, it can't be the same one that messed up my getting a boat in the water, because the one that came up from below had his insignia on, because that's what I knew he was. This chap It was very quiet, but I still think he was an officer. Anyway, we turned the float over, got in, and started to paddle back towards the large amount of survivors that were swimming and still alive in the water. On the way, I think it was 8 or 9, I can't remember really now, I left the Carly float and swam over and got people that were in difficulties and pulled them in. This is where I come to the one man that recognised me, because when I got to him to pull in, he was in a hell of a panic and he was going to pull me under. So I took my own life belt off. It was only a couple of a reef bow, you just did that and slipped it off. And I wrapped that round him and I was able to get him into the float. Otherwise he would have had the pair of us. So then we just went on picking people up. Anyone injured went into the float, the remainder of us on the outside holding on the nets. Then we came up to where there was two what we called floater nets. They're cork, round cork discs strung on ropes made into a raft. And I should think myself there was at least 250 men by the time we got there. And by the time we joined up and I held on to the side, so the lookout, HMS lookout, came up to pick us up. And that was another ironical point. Of course, they didn't stop. They stopped engines, but they didn't stop the boat. They came alongside and threw heaving lines. And who do you think stuck his arm in the air? Me. And the rope and the ball of the rope went round, and there was me being pulled in with 250 men, and I was almost dead then. Anyway, they eventually got him aboard. They put a bowline around me and pulled me up. And there was a chap serving out rum. I had half a pusser's cup of rum. I felt a bit better. And then the most tragic thing of all, going right back to those early days of 36, there was an unusual recruit with us. He was 27 years old. He was what we call a direct entry artificer. He was married with two children, a very good chap. And there he was laying on the deck, and a doctor, two-ring doctor, saying to me, help me throw his body over the side. And he didn't look, he must have been caught with the deck charges, I think. He had his life belt on, and the doctor said he was dead, and I had to help throw him over the side. I went round away from that, went round the other side of the destroyer, and there was another man with a jar of rum, and I'm afraid I had another jar of rum, another cup of rum. I went, found a quiet spot, and went to sleep. When I woke up, we were on our way back to change to another destroyer, then that's right, where I eventually had a bath, got rid of all the oil. Someone gave me some old clothes. HMS Feminist, that was. And we arrived back in Malta, in Gib. Afraid that's all a bit disjointed, it's...
How good a swimmer were you?
Oh, I was a good swimmer.